Breathing is much more than a simple mechanical act that brings oxygen into the body and carries away carbon dioxide. All ancient indigenous healing systems consider the breath a source of life force energy. Proper breathing promotes deep relaxation, self-awareness, and connection with spirit that supports health and vitality. Breathing impacts every aspect of our life, from physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual.
And today we've got an expert that knows all about this. We have Dennis Lewis with us. Dennis is a longtime student of the Gurdjieff work. He teaches the transformative power of the presence through breathing, Qigong, and meditation. He's a widely recognized authority on natural, authentic breathing. And he's the author of the acclaimed book, The Tao of Natural Breathing. And he has a new book out now from Shambhala Productions called Free Your Breath, Free Your Life. He's a co-editor of two books. He's been studying Tai Chi and Qigong for years. He teaches regularly at the Esalen Institute and at the annual National Qigong Conference. So it's really great to have you here, Dennis. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Len. Thanks.
Welcome.
And hi, Vicki.
We have so much stress today in our lives, and I don't really think that humans are meant to deal with all of this stress. I want to know how breathing can help the stress.
Well, you're right, Vicki, and one of the biggest issues that we're facing right now is that it's not even just the ordinary stress we think of in terms of jobs and so on and the economy, but
sure.
Also the constant barrage of negative information, of people dying around the earth.
Mm.
You know, there's always been stress, but there's never been 24 hours nonstop communication about the stress.
It's like we're revved up all the time.
And even though consciously we may think that we're dealing with it quite well, our nervous system is responding. And one of the ways that the nervous system responds is that we start breathing faster.
Mm.
And as we start breathing faster, we start breathing up in the top of our lungs, up in the top of the chest. And one of the results of that fast breathing is that we start losing too much carbon dioxide too quickly, which constricts our arteries, airways, makes the red blood cells get sticky, hold on to the oxygen, so that we could have plenty of oxygen in our lungs and in our blood, but it won't get to the cells of our brain and body because everything is constricting and the red blood cells are hanging on to the oxygen.
It makes us nervous, yeah. Too, doesn't it?
It
perpetuates it.
Yes, it perpetuates it, but it also impacts the cardiovascular system, impacts the digestive system, impacts the immune system because it pushes us in the direction of alkalinity. We need carbon dioxide in the nervous system. We need a certain level of it. And the fact is that stress, we start losing too much carbon dioxide too quickly.
So we're feeding our plants.
Yeah, feeding our plants, and not feeding ourselves.
You look at the positive side of anything, Vicki. I love it.
And not feeding the cells of the brain and body. So we get anxious and more irritable, which a vicious cycle.
So what can we do about that?
Well, one of the first things that we have to do is see that that's happening.
Notice it.
We have to notice it. We have to start becoming aware of what's actually going on in our bodies. And for that to happen, we have to come to something that's a bit quieter in ourselves, perhaps a kind of meditative state in which we touch what is most real in ourselves, which is a kind of receptivity, kind of silence, welcoming of impressions of the truth of what's actually happening.
So we only need to do this, what, once in a while? During the day? I mean, we can't be focusing on our breath all the time.
No, but we can begin to notice when our breathing starts speeding up. We can begin to notice the unnecessary tensions in our body because the fact is what happens is we start getting, let's say, tense in our belly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to impact the way the diaphragm moves. And it's going to impact the speed of the breath. It's going to probably mean we're going to start breathing faster. And so what we have to notice is the unnecessary tension, because as we notice the unnecessary tension, it's telling us something's wrong. You're tense somewhere. You'll notice sometimes, even yourself, you'll be eating and with one hand and your other hand will be clenched. That means you've got tension in your system somewhere and your breathing is responding to that.
So when you have breathing that's like that, that's this sort of sympathetic breathing, doesn't it wire the nervous system so it becomes more tense too? And lots of things follow it. So if you notice what you're saying is if you notice what your breath is like and you consciously shift it so that you're not doing chest breathing and you're doing more in the way of abdominal breathing, that you'll relax, you become better at exchanging air, and life will just be smoother?
Absolutely. And one of the things that comes up here, of course, is that there are certain kinds of breathing exercises that are very helpful to slow down the breath a bit, at least in the present moment, and begin to have the effects you just talked about.
I have a question, though. I want to know why abdominal breathing is promoted, because it seems to me that if you don't do chest breathing, you're not exercising your rib cage and all the fibers and connective tissue and everything that's up in your chest.
Good question. And I talk a lot about this in my book. Very, very important. Abdominal, let me explain how this works. The diaphragm is a dome-shaped structure, and it connects all around the lower ribs and down to the lower lumbar vertebrae. If the chest, the ribs, the intercostal muscles, and so on, and the spine are not relaxed and resilient and capable of moving, then the diaphragm is not going to be capable of moving as well either.
Mm-hmm. It freezes.
Sort of freezes. But the other side of it is that the belly needs to release on the inhalation so that the organs can drop down. Because when we inhale, the diaphragm wants to go down. It's pushing on all the organs. And if you've got a very tight belly, that means the diaphragm is going to have a hard time going down. So the idea of the belly opening is the organs drop, the diaphragm can more easily go down, lungs can expand more.
Right.
However, if I've got tightness in my rib cage, you're absolutely right. It's not that we don't breathe at all in our rib cage or back or spine, because we do, but that this is not the primary place we breathe.
So your rib cage expands when you're exhaling instead of inhaling.
No, the rib cage opens when you're inhaling.
That's right.
Diaphragm is going down. Everything is opening.
So when you're inhaling from your abdomen, it also expands your chest at the same time.
When you're allowing the abdomen to move on the inhalation, the organs drop down, the diaphragm drops down, the lungs can expand more, and that means that the rib cage can expand more as well.
Exactly.
But if you have a tight belly, which many of us have, go to any gym.
Look at
any fashion magazine, and what will you see?
Right.
You will see this washboard belly.
That's right.
And people telling you you've got to hold your belly into your spine. Well, when you hold your belly really hard into your spine, you can't take a deep breath. You can't take a full breath. You're going around locked up in your core here. So what has
so
to happen?
So we're trained to do the quote-unquote wrong kind of breathing, because when we're infants and babies, I think we normally do diaphragmatic
breathing. Now, another problem comes up here, and that is that even if we begin to breathe well in our bellies, and even if the chest and the back and so on begin to open up a bit and release that unnecessary tension, there's still the problem that by the time we're adults, our diaphragms have weakened.
Right.
There's been measurements of the diaphragm taken. Diaphragm can move up and down about 5.5 to 6 inches, somewhere in that range.
That's quite a bit.
Average person on the street, they've taken measurements, is about 1.5 inches.
Wow.
Normal would be around 3 inches for most activities.
Mm-hmm. How about people with emphysema or asthma?
Emphysema, the diaphragm is barely moving. It's just twittering.
Are there certain exercises they can do that would be different? Or
one of the first things that you have to do if you're going to work with somebody with emphysema is you have to begin to get the diaphragm moving. The only way you can get the diaphragm moving is with sound.
Mm.
The only way you can strengthen the diaphragm, and I'm going to say this point blank, the only way you can strengthen the diaphragm is using sound. If you look at all the spiritual...
Does this also work with pulmonary fibrosis and other types of respiratory problems?
It works with many respiratory problems. I'm not sure about pulmonary fibrosis.
Sure.
I haven't worked with that.
Sure, it would.
Yeah. But I'm sure it would.
Okay.
But the idea is you have to start with sound. However, many emphysema patients can't even say a few words without being totally exhausted. But you could get them doing simple things like 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
So you whisper it.
1, 2, 3, 4. And you begin to condition the diaphragm, because what is sound? Sound is nothing but the breath, this miracle of the breath going through the vocal cords. When you start making sounds, you are providing isometric exercise. You're giving feedback to the diaphragm. It's the diaphragm. If you just let the air flow out like that, there's no resistance.
So in other words, it would be good to encourage these kind of patients to talk.
Not so much talking. Talking is very staccato, and it has a lot of emotional content.
Maybe singing,
content.
Dennis.
Toning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chanting.
Yeah.
Om.
Sure.
Mantras.
Sure.
I do a lot of this in my workshops, but even more so, but for a person with emphysema, is not even maybe going to have the strength to go,
Yeah.
So you're going to have to start them out whispering.
Like whispering.
1, 2, 3, 4. And you have to whisper just fast enough that you get the diaphragm moving in one fluid motion.
Mm-hmm.
You want the diaphragm wants to move fluidly. It doesn't want to have these starts and stops all the time. When you talk, it starts and stops, so you're not going to really strengthen the diaphragm. And A person with emphysema is not going to even have the strength to talk.
How much can you improve breathing? If somebody has an emphysema that's severe and their diaphragm is not moving, it would seem to me that it would really be especially important to learn to move that diaphragm, because that's where you can get the reserve built into being able to breathe more. If you've got 5 or 10% more air in your lungs for somebody who's right at the edge, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and you've got to get the old air out of the lungs. And one of the problems
is,
yeah, and one of the problems is, of course, the diaphragm is what actually squeezes the lungs to help remove the old air. If the diaphragm is not strong enough to squeeze the lungs, then it can't squeeze out the old air. And then you're stuck with this, you know. But let's talk more about now the healthy people, because I think that's also very important to maintain our health.
Well, I learned some diaphragmatic breathing when I took theater acting classes. Because if you don't do diaphragmatic breathing when you're on stage to project, you're going to damage your vocal cords.
Right. But
and
how do you do it?
A lot of these exercises.
So, but how do you do diaphragmatic breathing? You see, people tell me this all the time. Well, I breathe with my diaphragm. And basically, they make an effort to push something here.
Yeah.
That is not diaphragmatic breathing. The only way the diaphragm... The only way you can actually know that you're activating the diaphragm is with sound. And you can judge the strength of your diaphragm very much based on how long you can make a sound, how long you can sustain the sound, and what kind of power is in the sound.
How about movement, Dennis? Can certain movements help you to breathe diaphragmatically?
They can begin to help loosen up. In fact, this is one of the things that I talk about in my book, is the 7 ways of working with your breath. And movement-supported breathing is one of them.
Yeah.
If you are tight in your rib cage, tight in your back, tight in your belly, you can strengthen your diaphragm all you want. But if the rest of your system doesn't respond to the movement of the diaphragm, then that's not the diaphragm is not going to be working very efficiently. So you need to work with movements.
Good. All right. Well, so we've kind of summarized a whole lot of information here that really talks about the interrelationship of the breath with our health, with our mind, our bodies, our spirit. And if we can learn to relax and to consciously notice how we breathe, it can make a big difference in how we do in exchanging air, but also in how we feel. So most of us look at breathing as merely exchanging oxygen and carbon dioxide, but it's much more profound than that. If you'd like more information about this fascinating subject, you can get a copy of Dennis Lewis's book, Free Your Breath, Free Your Life, or go to his website at www.authentic-breathing.com. That's www.authentic-breathing.com. Or give him a call at 415-282-4896. Thanks, Dennis.
Hey, thanks, Len.
Thanks,
Vicki.
Now, is this live?